not watching Notepad. I'm your host, Ibrahim Sani. We're talking about the very, very vibrant environment of startups. Very recently, Scale Up Malaysia, in partnership with Quest Ventures, Indelible Ventures, and Meranti, has signed on a few startups with about 250,000 ringgit co-investment. These VCs are signing them on with the intent of growing and scaling up the business quite considerably. Joining us in the studio in person is Aaron Sarma, General Partner of Scale Up Malaysia. Aaron, we've known each other for quite some time now.
It's been a while, actually. Yeah.
And you know, things have changed, but some things have remained the same in terms of the vibrancy of the businesses in Malaysia, the startup business in Malaysia. I'm pretty sure that the COVID situation has, I don't know, impacted or hindered some growth. But let's go through one by one in terms of the development of the startup industry. But we must start with your cohort 3 announcement.
Sure.
Let's go through with that announcement.
So thanks for having me on board. It's great to be on the show with you after quite a number of years, actually.
Yeah, actually.
But cohort 3 is our third cohort at Scale Up Malaysia. We started in 2019. We had a vision. We thought there was an opportunity in the market or a gap in the ecosystem where our entrepreneurs actually needed more support, right? And support normally is in terms of, we think about it just as capital, and yes, we provide some elements of capital, but it's also in training, understanding how to do go-to-market, dreaming big and developing an expansion plan beyond Malaysia. And so we felt that this is something that we needed to do. So in 2019, we started with our first cohort. We invested in 10 startups then. Last year, we partnered with Quest Ventures and we did another 10 companies. And this year, towards the end of last year rather, we partnered with Quest Ventures, Indelible Ventures and Meranti to kind of do our third cohort. So our third outing, really looking at new companies. And today we're really excited to announce that we've got 11 new companies that we've brought into the program. We're investing some capital into them. But really it's not only about the capital, which I'm sure they're all excited about, but really about the opportunity to show these startups to the world and to really get them traction so they can grow beyond Malaysian borders and build large, sustainable, successful businesses.
You know, you're right, because capital is very important, but at the same time, we're looking at networking,
yep.
We're looking at coaching, and we're looking at sharing the ideas between perhaps the network that you have within your accelerator program. How is this translated into growing the business? Is it bearing fruit? But what about your first cohort, cohort 1 or cohort 2? How does that translate into growth? Are there any successful gems coming in from those previous cohort?
I mean, we're really excited for what's happened with the first and second cohort, especially over the last few months. We've seen some really, really exciting stories. And we do attribute it a lot to the fact that the program is not just about, we run like a school where it's cookie cutter, you come in at a certain time and in 3 months you're out of there. We also spend a lot of time with the companies. We spend time with coaching. The partners, we commit like an hour a month with each of the companies we work with. And so over the last few months, we had a company called Fee54. They do co-farming and they help build agriculture, agropreneurs as they call them. They raised $3.1 million from RHL Ventures and some other investors around the region. We also had a company called ATX, which is a solution to digitize mom and pop stores. And that's a great founder who has been building for many years, and we invested 18 months ago. And they sold to an Australian listed entity called Novati for $9 million Aussie dollars in December. So we're very excited for them. And very, very recently, actually a couple weeks old, we just announced an investment from Sequoia Capital into a company called Impact, who joined us in cohort 1. And Impact's a really interesting story because when they joined us, they were a loyalty program. And then we realized that there were so many things we could do. And these things came up in the coaching sessions, right? We realized, you know, you've built a really cool technology and maybe a loyalty program is not the right application for this technology. We can build it into something of more fintech enabler. And so now their solution actually enables payments into a lot of e-wallets and fintech solutions. And so they can make any fintech solution super basically with their service. And having Sequoia Capital, one of the blue chip investment companies from around the world, invest in this company is really a testament to how a company can transform overnight through the right guidance and the right kind of coaching.
You know, your pedigree as an individual is also quite exemplary. You started off Touristly many years ago. You exited to Air Asia. Of course, those were the days when tourism was still okay. Do you feel that the kind of experience that you can bring to the table is actually quite valuable as well. And with that pedigree, people actually can look at your statements and your coaching with the notion that, okay, this guy knows something as well. Do you feel that the entrepreneur kind of a background really helps in getting the messages across to these investee companies that you guys are on right now?
First of all, thank you for being so kind and generous in your comments. But I do think having being an entrepreneur, and I still think of myself very much as an entrepreneur, does bring a lot in the way we talk to the company. So we're not coming from an academic standpoint or from a pure finance standpoint. We're coming from people who have built the business before. I've got five other partners, right, in Scale Up Malaysia. We've got Doc, Siva and Renu, who've been running coaching programs with Cradle for many years. They themselves have been running a business for a long time. Zelia has been with Cradle Fund for many, many years as the VP of Investments. And so she's seen thousands of startups in a time. And then we've got Andre, Shanley and I. Andre ran a telco startup many years ago and he sold his company. And Shanley was running Baby Dash and she exited her company. And so we feel like we've got an interesting mix of individuals who are entrepreneurs and industry veterans. And so we don't come to the startup saying that, hey, you know what, here's what we read in a book, this is what you should do. We can bring a lot of life experiences, right? And sometimes a lot of entrepreneurship is not just the stuff you learn. It's about how do you deal with people? How do you deal with, you know, when you know, you can't get your team to work harder, or you have a life and death situation in the company, you're running a runway. How do you manage that situation, both with stakeholders, with staff, with your clients? And a lot of that is life experience, which is easier to impart when you've been through the journey before.
Okay, you know, the idea here is, of course, trying to coach as much people as possible and try to inspire them as well. In cohort 3, as I understand it, there were about 200 applicants and then you funneled it down to the 10 or 11 that you have finalized. The issue here is, of course, what happens to the rest of the folks out there, the 190-odd applicants. One idea that I was thinking of is, so Y Combinator has office hours where they have, of course, you're very familiar with this. It's a session where they have strong pedigree individuals who are entrepreneurs or probably still are, and they impart as much as possible their, I guess, life experiences in trying to make sure that the people that they speak to during office hours, Y Combinator, so that they can scale up as best as they could. Is this something that you guys are planning to do or is currently doing as well?
I love that you've asked this question, actually. So the program works where we go through these applications and we actually run the four-month program with not the 11, but actually with 20 of them. So we whittled down the 200 to 20 because we felt that we wanted to give some value to people whom we may not even select. And during the 4 months, we actually get to know the companies much, much better. And those companies actually are part of our alumni, even though we don't invest in them. In fact, Reka, who we announced investment for in this announcement we just made, was a cohort 2 company that we did not invest in at the end of cohort 2, but we really wanted to work with them and eventually decided that they had made enough progress since cohort 2 to invest in them. So we see our alumni as people that we will constantly work with, and if there are opportunities for us to invest in them moving forward as their businesses grow, as they make some tweaks to their models, then we will take those opportunities as they come. But to your larger point as well about maybe we can do more, right? And this is something we've been thinking about as well, because we realize that there's a need to provide more support to the ecosystem. And so we are actually thinking of doing, like you say, maybe a larger, more upfront coaching sessions, maybe more events. And we experimented a bit with this earlier this year. We're doing a lot of public events, which we saw some traction for, to help train the larger ecosystem and support it.
You know, it's also important that you meet as many people as possible because you're also trying to find that hidden gems in the market. Do you feel that this could be the entry point for you to touch base with the market and see how this can be part of that funnel process of finding startups that might be interesting? I'm sure there's some, you know, you meet 10 people or 20 people, you know, every day, for instance, I don't know. And you see one that is interesting and then you put it in your little black book, I suppose.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I do see companies on a daily basis. We get a lot of people reaching out to us. They either go to our website at scaleup.my and they express interest or they find us on LinkedIn and kind of stalk us that way. But we already start seeing companies right now, even now that cohort 3 has ended. We've not even announced cohort 4, but we are seeing quite a number of companies as it is because we want to build relationships. And one thing I've realized is that entrepreneurship is a team sport. it's about people, right? And so sometimes you need to build those relationships early on, even before they join your program and even before you invest in them, because you need to know that not just like on the numbers basis, but also in the on the people level, you're able to work with these entrepreneurs for many, many years to come, because that's how you make this team sport a successful sport.
Okay, we'll go for one short break. When we come back, we'll discuss a little bit more with Aaron Sarma. Welcome back. This is Notepad. I have with me in the studio Aaron Sarma, general partner of Scale Up Malaysia. We're talking about how they are growing their business on top of the fact that they are helping all the startups in Malaysia and beyond. Let's talk about the market. Malaysia is, I suppose, an interesting market to be having a conversation with. We're not that big like, for instance, Indonesia. We're not that fast like Vietnam. And we're not that rich or advanced in like in Singapore. But we do have 30 million worth of market. Is this a positive or a negative when it comes to growing startups? Do you feel that this is a place to grow startups?
I guess I'll take the last part of the question first, right? I do think Malaysia is a great place to build startups, and I've spoken about this quite a bit as well. But I, to your earlier point, I do agree that we are kind of in a weird inverse Goldilocks zone almost, right? Because when you inverse, talk...
Bad Goldilocks.
Like a bad Goldilocks, yeah. Right? Basically, so you see like Singaporean founders never say, I'm going to build a successful business in Singapore and then I'll figure it out and grow regional. They are regional from day one. By necessity, they have no choice because Singapore is such a small market. But in Indonesia, for example, the market is so big, so the founders, I wouldn't even think about anywhere else because I've got,
you know 200 plus million
people, right? In a large market, which is pretty substantial. I'll never have to leave the market again. Malaysia has this weird problem. 30 million is sizable. I agree. It's enough to build a multi-million dollar business maybe, but it's not enough to build a billion dollar business. So what we've seen is that the companies who are able to have a regional playbook do really well. What happens in Malaysia is that our founders kind of get into a trap. They start focusing so much on Malaysia that they don't have a regional plan. Eventually, they stay in Malaysia and never go anywhere. And the businesses can be quite successful, but they never actually break out beyond Malaysia because they're too comfortable in the country. And so that is a problem because that's why we can't raise investments from foreign VCs because they see the Malaysian market is too small. And, you know, Malaysians don't build these unicorn businesses, but they build pretty substantial million-dollar businesses in the country.
A business that I really like is Aerodyne. They, of course, had a very good footing in the homegrown market, Malaysia, but they've always had global expansion as part of their plan. That's always been, I guess, baked into their business model. Today, they are a unicorn, and they've managed to attract international VCs by the hundreds of millions of dollars. And I'm trying to see if they're going to list anytime soon. I don't think so. But they are a story that is worth talking about when it comes to building a business locally and then have that global expansion. The question now is, isn't it strange that, you know, of all the startups that we've had, thousands of startups, only one managed to break out? I'm not talking about Grab because Grab has shifted to Singapore for a long, since you know they shifted to second gear of the vehicle. But yeah, why are we not thinking about that, about global expansion baked into the business model?
I think that's a really great point, right? Because and that is the problem of having this juara kampung kind of mentality, right? That we're happy in Malaysia and we don't want to expand. And Kamarul is visionary enough, the founder of Aerodyne, he's visionary enough to say that it cannot be a local play, it had to be a regional play or global play from day one. And I think that is the reason he's had so much success. Eric from Kasim also did this as well.
Yes, of course.
Quickly growing to Singapore, to Indonesia, and becoming this regional play.
Yeah.
And so one of the things that we try to teach our companies right off the bat is that if you're coming to us and you only want to be in Malaysia, that's a problem. Because you're never going to build that massive successful company. You got to think to how you can sell regional to other markets, to other nations. So we actually asked them, like, what's country number two? What is it and when are you going there? Because that's really important for us to build that Asian playbook. One thing we've seen is that...
Sorry, when you ask these type of questions, are they stumped or do they have an answer?
90% of the time, most of us are stumped because they never thought of it, right? And but the ones that do actually have an interesting story to tell or interesting thesis, right? We got one of our companies, right, who... it's a company called A1. They do learning solution management. And they were in our cohort one as well. immediately after quarter one, they raised from a Singaporean VC, but they've been growing fast. They're currently cash flow positive. And during the pandemic, when all the schools are shutting down, they figured out how to grow the business. And they've now grown into Hong Kong, into the Philippines, and they're actually building a team in Indonesia now. So it's really exciting to see that when the founder has that mind switched on, going regional, it's really powerful. And actually, people really like it. Investors love it when a Malaysian entrepreneur is able to scale regionally.
Okay. One other idea that I want to explore is, of course, trying to see what industries do well. Is it agrotech? Is it climate tech? Is it food tech? Whatever, right? Which areas do you think holds most promise in terms of growing a business into a unicorn? But also, what other areas that are deeply in need of solutioning right now, but might not necessarily be able to grow a business into that multi-billion-dollar, multi-market kind of aspirations?
I think we also need to recognize as Malaysians, we have maybe certain limitations because of the market size, but we have certain assets that we could leverage to build these large businesses. So Aerodyne largely has been successful because they play a lot in agriculture, right? Because they can take advantage of their drones and working in farms and plantations and stuff, right? And so I think things like agri-tech is a huge opportunity for Malaysia. We've got lots of land, lots of history in agriculture. That's something that maybe we should spend more time on, more money in, because that's a huge natural opportunity for us. And other markets in the region aren't really taking advantage of this. And we're seeing actually interest from like investors in Japan coming to Malaysia because they see us as like a prime place to start this kind of opportunity. Another thing I really see opportunity in is this Islamic space, Islamic digital economy rather. So not just the fintech component of it, but also the lifestyle around it, because as a Muslim country, we could build these solutions. And so far, there aren't really many big solutions out there for this space. And I think Malaysia should be the number one in it, one of the plays that we have at least. So I think these are natural things that we could actually look at.
You know, Malaysia was, you know, a big deal when it comes to Islamic solutions, either from Islamic fintech or whatever, right? Any other Sharia solution. But we don't hear much of it these days. Do you feel that this is a missed opportunity, or things are just slowing down? Perhaps we need another rejig into this whole space right now.
Well, I don't know if they've slowed down. I know there's a lot of hype early, right? But after the hype died down, there weren't really products or businesses around it that could actually grow those ideas into reality. But over the last few years, actually, we've seen a couple of plays, right? We've seen guys like the Wahid Invest guys, who not really Malaysian, but they were operating here very successfully. AirAsia has a Muslim lifestyle product called Ikhlas, which is also pretty successful. And then also recently, there was the Noor that also started up as well in this space. So we're seeing like pockets of growth. And I actually met up with a company last week, which is also in this space as well. So I think there's pockets of growth and people are realizing the opportunity, but I really feel it's early days. And so entrepreneurs who can capitalize on the opportunity, I think there's a huge upside for them.
One other area that is deeply concerning is, of course, global change, climate change. And I think climate tech is going to be a big deal. I do share Kara Swisher of the New York Times view that the first trillionaire will come from this space. Do you feel that our entrepreneurs right now are looking at this seriously and trying to find solutions in this space?
So I completely agree with you that climate tech is something that is really important. I personally am very passionate about this, and I feel like this is something that I wish we had more entrepreneurs who are passionate about. We hardly see climate tech entrepreneurs who come and pitch to us. There are people who come with interesting solutions, but I think this is something that as a society, maybe it's not a natural fit for Malaysia at the moment, but it's something that should be a national agenda for the country. Because I think climate change is going to hit us in a very painful way in a couple of years.
It so is hitting us already.
Already, actually.
As we speak, Taman Sri Muda is on high alert yet again. Just what, 5-6 weeks ago, they were undergoing
You're right. Like every time there's a rain, now we worry about over people, right? Which is crazy. And so I think this should be a clarion call to entrepreneurs out there who are looking to build solutions in climate change. So like, if anybody is out there who's wanting to build something special, I'd love to speak to them, because I think we'd love to kind of pioneer some of the change in climate tech.
Sometimes we have the energetic entrepreneurs, but they're looking or searching for ideas. Do you feel that you have that ability, or Scale Up Malaysia has that ability to put two and two together? Great ideas, great solutions. You need talents to fix it or do it. And then you just say, you know, since you're energetic, since you are determined, since you are inspiring, why don't you do this? Does that work in this kind of setup?
When we start Scale Up Malaysia, we focus on companies that are at the growth stage, which is why companies that actually are accepted into the program are companies that already have some revenue and some traction. So we don't go for like the companies who have an idea or a PowerPoint presentation and they come to us and say, hey, can we join the program? But what I will say is that we love to have conversations with people early. So if you have an idea, and I am personally very passionate, especially about the early stage. I love the 0 to 1 phase of building a business because I find that's the most exciting part. It's the part where you're kind of experimenting and you're trying to look for ideas. You're reading up, doing research, asking questions, and really like putting together these Lego pieces to build something that could become a business.
Yeah.
So if people have these ideas, I would love to talk to them. And we love as partners to have these conversations early. And then we'll kind of give you advice where we can. There may be other places you can go to for support. And then when you're ready, come to us. We'll come and help you accelerate and scale the business.
Okay. We'll go for one more short break before we conclude our conversation with Aaron Sarma of Scale Up Malaysia. Thanks for staying on. I have with me in the studio Aaron Sarma of Scale Up Malaysia. Aaron, let's talk a little bit more about Scale Up Malaysia as an entity, as a business entity. So you guys are an accelerator right now. Do you guys want to look into growing your business and move into proper VC, raise LPs, and see how you can be a very strong business enabler in that sense?
Yeah, we see ourselves now, I mean, because we've worked with so many companies so far, and we really see now that the companies are growing. So beyond just the first check that we help write for them, we do see that we want to be part of the arc of their careers. And I think the real opportunity is to kind of double down on the successful ones and the ones that do really well. So to your question, we are looking to expand our portfolio a little bit to become more like an accelerator VC, where we're also doing not just casual accelerator investments, but also follow-on investments in the companies. Because that's really how we can continue to add value to them, and we can continue to kind of benefit from the outside, the growth of the successful companies in the portfolio.
Do you think that this requires you to, I guess, search for LPs outside of Malaysia? Definitely, I guess. But which area? Is it China? Is it Japan? Or is it the traditional markets of US and Europe?
So I do think there's a lot of capital in Malaysia. And in the ideal scenario, and I know your question kind of leads to this, we'd love to have most of the funds come from Malaysia for the stuff we're going to do in the future. But you know, that may, if there are challenges there, then of course we'll look beyond. And we are talking to investors out of the country as well. But the challenge is that we need to be able to unlock more capital than just from high net worth individuals in Malaysia. We need to unlock the capital of corporate Malaysia, who we feel very much is sitting on the sidelines for a lot of the startup success. A lot of the funds in Malaysia generally depend way too much on government support, but corporate Malaysia can play a larger role. And one of the things we've been asking for many years, and in fact, I think it's like two governments ago, we were talking about having a corporate tax incentive for corporates, right? And we think that's one way, not the only way, but one way we can unlock corporate capital.
I see your idea. I, however, am very pessimistic. Why? Because corporate Malaysia, they are very ingrained in how they do things.
True.
Even within the industry, even within any industry, two or three corporates within the same industry would behave very differently in terms of corporate culture. They are slow, they are sluggish, but they are like that for a reason. To ask them to do something very quick, nimble, experimentary, exploratory, you know, that kind of thing, it is, oh my God, it's like asking somebody that has never done something to do it. I don't think it's going to work.
I see where you're coming from, and I agree that it's a long road to come, right? And I think part of it is we need to show success as well, right? So having success with guys like ATX and Fee54, and having guys like, you know, Impact make a difference, suddenly a lot of corporate companies are starting to talk to these guys, and they'll also want to have a piece of the pie. Hopefully, eventually, they'll realize that you know, it's not just about getting some upside from investments into startups, but it may be a necessity to survive in the digital economy that's to come, because things are moving at a very, very fast rate.
Yeah, see, I'm picking up the fact that it has to be down to the personality inside the corporate.
100%.
Instead of institutionalizing that behavior. Yeah. And I think that, you know, if it's institutionalized, it's better, of course, right? You know, it doesn't matter who the person is running the show, it's going to be just fine. But if you're down to, say, the CEO or the CIO or the person in charge of new businesses, if that personality is out of that picture, game over, nothing can be done in terms of the corporate.
I mean, it's true. Like within the corporate, you have a limited window to prove that digital innovation can be successful, right? Some companies, thanks to the pandemic, it has become like, there's no choice. They couldn't opt out of it. And so those companies actually could take advantage of digital innovation and prove to their boards and to their stakeholders that this is something we need to play a bigger role in. So our hope is, as we're talking to corporates and to high net worth individuals, is that they realize this. And we're seeing lots of interest from different corporations who want to be a part of what we're doing and work with us and work with the companies. And so we hope this trend continues. We hope we can educate and maybe interact and engage more with more corporates. But we're seeing the trend lines move in the right direction. We just need to move a little bit faster.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I agree. Especially when we talk about 2022 being the year of recovery, moving fast and moving agile and nimble is also key.
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. I wish I can have a lot more conversation with you, but that's it. That's all the time that we have right now. That was Aaron Sarma, the general partner of Scale Up Malaysia. Scale Up, of course, has opened up registration for startups to state their interest to participate in Cohort 4. Do check them out on all their social sites as well as on their website. Until then, thanks very much for watching and goodbye.